Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the pro wrestling quiz show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, how's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So far, faster, freer, down.
Open the voice gate for July 30th, 2024. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box that says sponsor this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joined alongside, as always, Case Slow. And Case, I have to ask you, we are two relatively busy people, but I have one question I kept in my quiver here. Have you watched any of Gold Zone?
I'm sorry, you kept it where?
In my quiver. I kept this one question in the quiver when we were talking.
What is your quiver?
It's like you have an arrow quiver.
Okay, didn't help me at all.
Yeah. No,
what's an arrow quiver?
Oh, it's what holds your arrows if you use a bow and arrow.
Okay, I feel comfortable not knowing what that is. That's fine. I've never come across a situation in which I've needed a quiver. So, I'm sorry. I was too distracted by the verbiage to understand the question. What was the question?
Oh, I was wondering, what is your impression of the biggest innovation of the modern Olympiad, Gold Zone?
You know, I have not actually spent a ton of time on Gold Zone. Now, I've spent a ton of time watching the Olympics. I love the Olympics. And I enjoyed the COVID Olympics, but I am really enjoying this year because I'm watching all the basketball. YouTube TV has a setting where they have unlimited DVR space to begin with. You can record every bit of Olympics that air on TV. So I've been going back in the men's basketball that I've missed live. I've been going back and watching parts of that. I obviously was into the skateboarding, even though Olympic skateboarding is very odd. I've watched a ton of judo. I love judo. That's been great. The Gold Zone is a great idea. It's great innovation. It's exactly what this Olympics needed, but I myself have not personally spent a ton of time with it.
So this is how I am Olympicsing right now. So I have Gold Zone on because at least for like Texas, like Chicago, everything's basically done by there's nothing live happening by about 5 o'clock our time.
Like, yeah, the bummer is like with my work schedule, because my work day starts at 5 a.m. and I'm home around noon, and the bulk of the good stuff is happening at like 10 a.m. and I'm kind of missing it because it's when I'm maneuvering around the office.
Yeah, so what I do or what I have is I have everything through Peacock. So what I've been doing is like I've gone and been like, all right, each time that there's a track cycling event, I want you to DVR it. And then I'm just going to I'm Gold Zoning the rest of it, because I realize that like whenever my fiance is over, like, yeah, we'll probably like watch like the primetime version if we're not doing something else. But like I just want to see like constant like sports. And like today, yeah, like they had like the perfect moment of you had handball and you had USA 3x3 basketball.
See, and I missed the 3x3. I'm gonna go back and catch some of that because I like that. I heard Jimmer Fredette's playing for Team USA.
Team USA is wild. It's not just Jimmer Fredette. Canyon Barry.
Okay.
and of course, like everyone's favorite like NBA kind of star thing here. Chase Budinger is like one of the beach volleyball teams.
Yes,
like,
we I saw here. That. Yeah.
So like we have like a uniquely weird basketball kind of situation already. But it just is one of those moments where it's like, okay, I have handball and I have 3-on-3 basketball being played at the same time. And they got Scott Hansen in, which, yeah, I feel like they give Scott Hansen, you know, the prime time like afternoon slot, because like that's when you want to do this. So getting Scott Hansen to like talk about like women's gymnastics finals I was like, all right, like he's doing like the narration, and then they would like cut in with like their actual announcers. I was like, all right, they've actually really kind of figured this out here. So I'm Gold Zoning the rest of the Olympics, and just the stuff that I really am into. So like track cycling, modern pentathlon, and of course Kieran, I will be watching those on DVR unspoiled.
I'm super into it. That's what I like about the judo, is in the preliminary rounds, it's just one right after another. You know, it's Sudan against Pakistan, and those guys roll around, and then, you know, it's Iran versus Canada just right on the mat right afterwards. It's a great format. It's great stuff. I always wish it went a week or two longer. I'm sad already thinking about the fact that, you know, it's going to be over here before we know it. I like getting up on the weekends. On Saturday morning, Sunday morning, they were showing boxing. And again, it's like 7 in the morning Chicago time. It might even be like 6:30. And I'm watching, you know, like Palestine versus Cuba in Olympic boxing. I'm like, man, this is a weird thing for me to be doing right now. I'm just watching people from all corners of the world beat each other up.
And it's also the fact that they're doing them all like in the great like Parisian like open air spaces. So it's like, yes, Canyon Barry right now is playing 3-on-3 basketball like right next to the Eiffel Tower. Or it's like, oh, all of the fencing is happening like in the Hotel de Sade and things like this. And it's like, oh, well, like this feels like a weird use of time and like resources. But also at the same time, I'm like, oh, the whole thing about the opening ceremony, it's like, oh, y'all just don't want to have an Olympic stadium. Like, that was the big revelation for me, was like, oh, y'all don't really want to have to like try to like pitch to Paris. We want to have a giant stadium, which, given how everything has happened with the poop river, I don't blame them.
No. I mean, you know, as I always point to with the Olympics, it bankrupted a country in Greece 20 years ago. I would very much be against that sort of thing. But God, it's good. I'm so into the USA basketball because it's obviously a phenomenal team. I think it's a phenomenal team that has a chance to have a really catastrophic loss, either in the lead up to the gold medal game or in the gold medal game itself. I could see one game going horribly, horribly wrong for them, and it's not that I'm rooting for that, but I think it would be so interesting if that were to happen, because it's, you know, another legacy deal for LeBron. Durant, and this is full Bill Simmons brain, I'm just copying what he said, but, you know, Durant has a chance to establish himself as basically the greatest national basketball player of all time, and you have Embiid, who is just outright saying falsehoods on podcasts and not getting checked by it. And we're all just like, oh, okay. You know, Embiid saying the Boston Celtics were a super team, and if he played like Jason Tatum, he'd get reamed for it. And, well, he could be the greatest player of all time, but he's been injured, and he's always injured. And now he's slandering LeBron while he's playing with LeBron. And it's like, this is nuts. And then he played horrible against, I think it was Sudan in game one. It's just like, oh my God, the USA basketball stuff is great. I love the Olympics. It's the only time I feel patriotic. I root for the US when I can. And when I'm not rooting for the US, I'm obviously rooting for Japan, given what we're doing here.
Yeah. It's just like, for me, I feel like that, like, this is the time of, like, I just like seeing things that I'm not going to see.
Yes, so, exactly. It's, you know, it's the boxing. It's again, for me, the judo. I'll do the rugby. Fencing. I'll do the handball. I do a lot of water polo. I think that sport's fascinating. I love the water polo.
I feel like I'd be so awful at water polo. Like,
I can't swim, so I know I wouldn't be good at it.
Oh God, I'm just like imagining like the just getting water constantly into my sinuses.
Well, that's the thing.
You just live in a world of water going up your nostrils, and it's just like, well, I don't ever need to like get a neti pot because I'm just blasting my nose with chlorine every day.
Yeah, because I love the concept of it. It's like, okay, how do you play defense? I get it. It's like hockey on the water, but how do you play defense? And it's like, well, you attempt to drown your opponent is basically what it is. Like, you're not trying to kill them, but you're almost killing them every single time you have to put on the brakes. I love it. It's a great sport.
Yes, and speaking of great sports, we are back.
I'm going to stop you. I have one more non-Durangi thing to talk about.
Dang, I thought I had that there.
I know. But the appropriate transition, I have to mourn with somebody, is not a great sport. Mike, the state of the Chicago White Sox, let's talk about it.
Yeah, man. Like,
sorry to our European listeners, but you'll understand. Stick with us. This is the baseball conversation. You will understand.
Right. So the Chicago White Sox, like, I feel like ever since Ozzie Guillen coached this team and the way he got fired, ever since then, it's been like perpetually cursed. And now it's like even more so with like just everyone, like Eloy Jimenez getting traded. And then basically just like looking around, and it's just like, oh, this is a team that very likely is going to only win, what, 40 games, if that? Like, well, I don't think they're going to win more than like 13 more games this year.
As we record, and for those that don't know, the baseball season goes through the end of September. There's 162 games in a season. We're recording this. It is not yet August. We're recording this at the end of July. Mike, if the White Sox went undefeated for the rest of the season, they would still finish under 500.
Yeah, they're 27-82. And
they've lost 15 straight, which is a franchise record as well.
Yeah, and the manager hates everyone on the team. Everyone of talent has kind of been traded out. Tommy Pham is still around, and
Tommy Pham's in St. Louis now. They traded him.
They traded Tommy Pham. Okay, that's the real everyone abandoned the ships, because like Tommy Pham was like the one guy I was counting on him to like get into a fight in the locker room.
Yeah,
because the one last thing left for the White Sox this year is like a full on enter locker room fight.
I've never seen a team like this before. The thing that I always hyper fixate on is the run differentials for this season, because like the Yankees, right? Yankees are a very good team this year. Their run differential for the entire season is plus 116. The Phillies, another very good team, their run differential is plus 104. The Chicago White Sox run differential this season, as we sit here right now, is minus 221. That is unbelievable. They're 100 runs worse in the opposite direction than the New York Yankees are. And they have Garrett Crochet, who is statistically one of the best pitchers in baseball, which shows you how bad everybody else is. And they traded Eric Fede, who was their second best pitcher. And it's just, it's unbelievable. The point I've made this entire year, and we'll see it come to fruition now, is they were this bad before the trade deadline. So that meant they had Fede and they had Pham and they had the corpse of Eloy Jimenez. They don't have those guys anymore. I'm frustrated they didn't trade Robert. I'm gleeful they didn't trade Crochet. But this is historically one of the worst sports teams to ever exist.
Yeah, and it's like such a wild. So today was the trade deadline.
Yep.
And with now essentially the expanded wild card division, you're just like the Rangers were actually buyers and not sellers, even though that they're four games out. Like the West, everyone's kind of been shooting themselves in the foot in various kind of fun ways. I mean, talk about a team that like bad things are happening. Ron, did you hear what Ron Washington was like? Just like has pretty much is trying to sell Mike Trout down the river.
Yeah, now? No kidding.
Yeah, this is just like a very much like a vicious like year, I feel like, because
baseball's good. I don't know how to. I think the ecosystem's just too far spread out, because I started thinking about at the beginning of the year Shota Imanaga and how well he was pitching for the Cubs as a rookie, and now the Paul Skeens thing, and it's like, man, it feels like baseball's really good this year, and yet it still doesn't have any national attention. And that feels wrong. Like, if you're, because I fell off baseball for a few years, but like, it's back, baby.
And Paul Skeens is like the perfect example of someone that like you would think would be much a bigger deal.
He like, started the All-Star game
as a rookie. Like, and everyone still talks about Livy Dunn. Like he's still, like, you would think that if baseball, who for our European international listeners, baseball has had a superstar problem like long before WWE had a superstar problem. Like they've just never been able to basically, since the steroid era, have not been able to kind of get the hearts and minds like it was. And I just like, you like look at someone like Paul Skeens fresh out of college. Like he's pitching for the College World Series for LSU last year. He gets pushed through. He makes the All-Star game. And he starts as a rookie, and he has like one of the most like famous, I mean, she's an NCAA athlete, but more so like for like as like an influencer, Livy Dunn is like monstrous. And it's just like, oh, it's just does not matter. Like Paul Skeens, like I feel like Paul Skeens should be like shouted from the mountaintops. And it's like, oh, Paul Skeens should have two no hitters right now.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I just think baseball is just so far down where it is. Like the people who are like the baseball sickos will be just going like, oh yeah, Paul Skeens. Like, okay, so we're talking about Paul Skeens on a Dragon Gate podcast. Like that we are here, but the thing is that there's just not like the community now to build off of that. So it's just like, why bother with
that? Yeah, I mean, you see it with, you know, the continued shredding of legacy media where it's like, God, you know, where is the Paul Skeens Sports Illustrated feature? That's really what I want right now. You know, where's the racy Paul Skeens, Livy Dunn, ESPN magazine shoot and, you know, them interviewing each other or whatever. You know, the Skeens thing is crazy because I guess for those that don't know, like the idea of being drafted and then 1 year being in the major leagues, that in itself is a foreign concept to 99.9% of players there are. He did that and then started in the All-Star game, which is literally unheard of. I mean, it's mind-blowing stuff.
For a sport that is over 140 years old.
Yes. It's a little head-scratching. And, you know, a lot of times in the office, we have First Take on. Obviously, it's on mute because we're doing our own talk show as that's happening. But we like having First Take on just so we can sort of make fun of the format of the show and make fun of the headlines and the topics they're talking about. And I always just scratch my head. It's like, can they not do 15 minutes on the NL Central? Can they not do a you know, if they're going to do a baseball topic, it's Aaron Judge related, which I get it. Trust me, I've seen the way they treat the NBA. I'm not expecting glorious MLB coverage. But like in the middle of July, can you guys not talk about the NL West for just a second? Because baseball is really good this year. There's really exciting players. There's fun storylines. And there's a rookie phenom with a famous girlfriend. and that doesn't feel like it's a big enough deal.
Right. Whereas, I mean, we've seen in the NFL how someone not even in the glory position because of like his girlfriend now is like one of the top three stars in the NFL. Like he was not that way before he started dating Taylor Swift. But now yeah. Travis Kelce is like name recognition wise, one of the three, if not the top two most recognized people now. So like you kind of get to see it on display what happens when like there is like a cultural machine behind you and also a sport that's able to like go like tap into that versus baseball, that like the fact that like Livy Dunn wasn't like all over Dallas Fort Worth for the All-Star game like was surprised me. Like I was like, why isn't she like throwing out the opening pitch? Like just make her into like you should be tapping into this.
I hope this doesn't sound offensive, but the thing that always impresses me about Livy Dunn is that she always comes across very pleasant whenever I see interviews with her. And I wouldn't expect somebody who's that pretty with that level of fame to
making
be like
$5 million of NIL money. Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't expect to be like, oh yeah, I kind of like her. But every time I see her, I go, oh yeah, she seems fun. I kind of like her. It's just like, that's a real talent. Cause she might be a nightmare when the cameras are off. I don't know. All I know is that every time I see an interview with her, I go, man, she comes across really well in like a way that I would never expect her to, because I would assume again with the money and the fame and the looks that she would be a bit of a nightmare, but she's not. And it's very impressive.
Yeah. So why wasn't she like out front face forward, you know, for the entire thing? I mean, like instead of having the hats of which I've like tried to figure out why they've chosen those. I think really it was just someone's kid had the All-Star hats, which were like a bright highlighter blue.
And hideous. Pink. Hideous. Yeah. But worse
in person.
That's a whole other complaint of, you know, now they wear the actual team uniform for the Home Run Derby and then the All-Star Game jersey for the All-Star Game. And that's not the way it should be. That is completely ridiculous. You know,
yeah.
I thought for the first 2 years of Nike with the MLB, which was, you know, I don't know if you know this. I don't know how widespread this info is, but when Majestic, you know, lost their license, it was supposed to go to Under Armour. And Under Armour had the deal in principle, but they were doing so poorly financially that they went to the MLB.
Under Armour almost went out of business.
They were like, if we go through with this deal, you won't have a jersey provider. It's going to kill us. So Nike swooped in, as they do. And I thought for the first 2 years, I thought all of the rebrands they did were really solid. I love what they did with Pittsburgh. I love what they did with Milwaukee. I thought most of the City Connects were, if not strong, then at least they were logical. And then this year they completely fell off a cliff, and then the All-Star jerseys were horrible, and then they wore the All-Star jerseys during the game, and that was just a giant thumbs down.
Yeah, it's just massive cell phones, just one after another.
So in short, the Olympics are great, baseball is very good, the White Sox are terrible, and let's talk some Drangate.
That's right, and actually it's kind of one of those unique things that we're experiencing in 2024. Usually we would have basically the remainder of July off from Dragon Gate after Kobe Pro Wrestling Festival. That's not the case this year. They had one televised show to close out the month of July. It's their summer festival that they have at the home base of Kobe Sambo Hall. This is a show that they often, you know, treat it like a summer festival, like outside of the ring, and they have stalls. And I know that KZ and UT were doing like pseudo Okinawa-esque like portraits in the ring with things, and it's just that's how Dragon Gate got followed up from Kobe Pro Wrestling Festival. But before we get into the summer festival 2024 case, we want to take some time and kind of take stock of the state of the company and also where Dragon Gate kind of is, and also the hot topic of Yamato and moles to lead off this episode. So, okay, Yamato, like after this Kobe Sambo Hall show and really before it, remaining kind of in the news more so as his 14-minute promo has kind of spread throughout the Dragon system to the point that one person just seemingly cannot let it go, and that's T-Hawk. So I didn't mean to start with mole talk, but your takes of what all has gone on from Yamato, and he had a long Twitter thread that I know you posted a translation of in the Discord that it's just it's a cold war that's gone somewhat hot, but then Yamato says, like, we're not going to do business with him, so why am I even continuing this conversation? You know,
yeah, this Yamato promo, and I hinted at this last week, where I think it quite literally got a little bit lost in translation for the English speaking audience, and Jay wasn't doing the full promo translations like he normally does, and you know, as it turns out, for obvious reasons, with Yamato show closing promo. But I made the point last week, I think this Kobe world will be remembered not for the Twin Gate match, not for anything Mochizuki Jr. did, not for the old guy tag, but for this Yamato show closing promo. And if there's objective upward trajectory in the company that follows because of this promo, I think it could be looked at as a really special moment in the company going forward. One of the things that I'm really fixated on is if you go to the Gaiora YouTube channel, which is a great channel to follow because they upload high def, old Dragon Gate stuff, old All Japan stuff, and obviously like baseball and tennis and, you know, real sports that they have. But a lot of their Dragon Gate content, if it's an archived video, you know, something from the library, you're hovering around 20,000 views, let's say like 18 to 20,000 views. The newer Dragon Gate stuff they post always does a little bit better. That's like 22 to 25,000 views. For reference, the show closing Yamato promo, which they uploaded in full to YouTube immediately after the fact, which they never do, is currently sitting at 78,000 views. This is something that made headways. This is something people talked about, widely viewed on YouTube, widely discussed among all of the Japanese accounts that I follow, which I always like to point out is a small sample size. It's not something you can base your entire opinions on, but it's something that, in the same way that, you know, if somebody from another country wanted to get the pulse of AEW, let's say, you know, they should go to the Voices of Wrestling Discord, and you'd be able to at least glean a sample size from there. And I think the Twitter accounts that I follow, partially just through searching hashtags and finding repeat offenders, let's say, in terms of people that are always tweeting about this, partially by asking people that live in Japan, hey, who are some accounts that I should follow to be a little bit more in tune with this? For a week and a half now, this is the thing that's being discussed. It's Yamato's promo, it's T-Hawk's response, it's Yamato's Twitter rampage that he went on, which we'll discuss here momentarily, and then just the fallout from all of this, and the source of it being among especially the hardcore Dragon Gate fans, the ones that I follow that lean more hard into Dragon Gate rather than like, hey, I like Dragon Gate and sometimes I go to Glade, and also here's a New Japan thing. The Dragon Gate people feel a real sense of pride over this promo, and I that's why I'm so into this Yamato title run, which I, you know, we're a week into, obviously zero defenses so far, although we do have a Dream Gate match booked for Dangerous Gate, and boy, was I wrong. It's an exciting time. I think Yamato has his groove back. Some would argue maybe he never lost it. I think certainly for people like you and me, we've been waiting for Yamato to kind of have some bite once again, and he got it. But the main point of all of this is like, yeah, Yamato ruffled some feathers with this promo.
Yeah, and it was done in a manner that I think that when like this kind of like seeps through the crap or the cracks, which I mean, I feel like we both kind of expected that this would be a thing that either would be a big thing kind of treated like it is now, or it would have been a thing that like it would have happened and then, you know, we just not mention it again. It feels like that this was like a massive like vent release in a lot of ways, that for a company that like by and large, like the relationship with the other half of the Dragon System right now is just basically so bad that the only way that they work or share the same ring is because bigger companies tell Dragon Gate to get over it, basically, and say, you've got to do this. And this being like the first like utterance, and the fact that it came from Yamato, I think that those are certain things that, just because it seeps through the cracks a little bit, we should really, you know, hold it to account, the fact that it is Yamato, the one saying this, like, right after getting his further defining sixth Open the Dream Gate win, and like with the idea now that this is a title run that I feel like in a lot of ways we are going to expect to happen about 8 years ago, but just things did not work out that kind of way. And it's not like a reset or anything. It's just, as you've made the point very eloquently over the last week, this is the right move at this point, especially seeing that, you know, Yamato tapped into something and that the company in a lot of ways has now really kind of gone towards the idea that the promotion for a long time always used the term family, but the fact that Dragon Gate family kind of feels like it's going to be the tagline going forward for a little bit, like that like this is kind of like the thing of like defending the roost. And I feel like over the weekend the Twitter thread kind of is the thing to kind of get into, like, no matter what someone was going to say or like who was going to be the first Dragon Gate person to utter like the G something kind of thing or like call them out, the response, I'm not surprised whatsoever, like that the Glate guys, like, I mean, this gives them like a level of relevance that they like the relevance that they've not had, frankly, you know, since they left the company. And for someone like T-Hawk, I just like, man, go right ahead, like try to make it a shoot your angle, but Yamato kind of put him in his place with that though.
I don't have T-Hawk's. Is the website called OneNote? Is that where he wrote his response?
So yeah, it's basically like
Live Journal. That's the only way I can describe it, is it's like that.
Right. Yeah. It's a Live Journal like thing, like micro blogging, I would say. Like, it kind of reminds me, and this is gonna sound kind of wild, it reminds me a little bit like Tumblr, like old school Tumblr.
Okay, that's a good comp. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he also is someone who does like short, like 15-minute like solo podcasts that he posts to. So I will pull up like his note if you want to pull up the Yamato translation.
I've got the Yamato stuff, but yeah, please just summarize if you can real quick the point of T-Hawk's whole deal, because whatever he said irked Yamato, and obviously we've now come to expect weird late night Twitter ramblings from Yamato. He seems to be between this, which certainly has some real feelings involved, but also the Hiromu stuff from the All-Star Junior Festival last year, where it was, you know, part storyline, part truth, as confirmed by a few different people now, where Hiromu started talking about booking this All-Star Junior Festival and he wanted Dragon Gate guys, and Yamato was like, why do people only come to us when they need something cool, basically? You know, why is it whenever there's a special show, oh, everybody wants the Dragon Gate guys, but we're here doing our own thing, you know, throughout the entire year. We're the busiest company in Japan. And it led to Yamato and Hiromu stuff at All-Star Junior Festival. So this is yet another Yamato Twitter escapade.
Right. So a lot of people kind of had responses. And like the phrase that I know that you had someone do like translating. Did anyone like bring up like what the moles reference was to you?
Because no, I did not get clarification on that. I'm sure somebody... the person who translated the Yamato's tweets, I'm sure they're listening, and I'm sure they will send me a note of what T-Hawk was referring to with the moles to get further clarification there, and I'll drop that in the Discord if that person gets back to me.
Yeah, so essentially, like, I feel like that there is a response of that from the Glate roster that I'm not trying to translate, but essentially was like calling Dragon Gate guys sheep in a way. Like that was kind of my impression. Yamato, the person who really took it the most was T-Hawk. He wrote a blog update on his note, and essentially, like, he says, like, even if you claim if you're omniscient and omnipotent, which is one of Yamato's catchphrases, I don't give a damn. If you love bad-mouthing people, you should usually talk them your usual fun way. We're living lives to our greatest with Glate right now, you idiots. Pride or pride, is he only trying to look cool in the ring? I'll give it back to you exactly like that. I got fed up with what you call a few of lame, self-depreciating moles who have no pride whatsoever, so I chose a new path. And then he goes like this, and he's like, I don't know how he's communicating this to his juniors, but he's constantly complaining about the fact that it's over. I guess the split, something that T-Hawk did. This is a machine translation from Note. And then he brings up to the end, at the end of it, I can forgive bad mouthing over drinks, but the path I am now is publicly rejecting any further. I'll give something back. If you're going to make it a job, do it properly. One last thing. I still hate all of the mole guys, including the current president, as people from a current junior. Again, machine translation from that.
So feisty stuff. That led to a string of Yamato tweets. These were translated not by the machine translation. Luckily, we have a friend of the show who is a professional translator who lives in Japan, which has worked out incredibly well as of late. And so Yamato sent out a bunch of tweets. I will read them all in succession and treat it like a paragraph rather than a bunch of individual tweets here. And then we can go from there. So Yamato said, just thinking back on things when I dislocated my shoulder, that person, i.e. Shima, had an injured neck. And so we both missed a lot of shows. We were in the same car heading to the hospital. And he says, quote, you're a perpetual match four guy. Don't get any ideas above your station, end quote. Yamato then goes on to tweet about how he wanted to make a YouTube account, but he couldn't figure out YouTube's monetization, which is an excellent note. As I continue, he says, at the time, I couldn't really make sense of what he was saying. Well, I'm certain he doesn't remember any of it. I'm the sort who just says whatever pops into my head, but Shima's the type who's elevated saying whatever pops into his head into an art form. So back to the conversation in the car, I didn't really get what he was playing at, so I couldn't really get offended by it. I'm not like Sawada, which is KZ's shoot name. I'm not like Sawada. I've never spent my entire life walking in someone else's shadow. I've worn my heart on my sleeve. You know, I like a night out on the Raz just like anyone else. Well, not like anyone else, not like Sawada, which is again KZ. So he continues, so after the conversation in the car, I thought, hang on, you dick. You don't know anything about me. More importantly, why am I letting someone decide these things for me before the fact of the matter? I'm a bit recalcitrant, and it lit a fire in me, and we carried on that in real hazard. Don't get the wrong idea. There were good times, too, where we'd have a laugh together. But ultimately, I think our values were too different. Everyone puts their own pride first. Contrary to what everyone thinks, I'm not really the sort to hold grudges. If I ever ran into any of them, meaning Stronghearts, I'd probably ask if they were keeping well and be able to carry on civil conversation. That's why them young fellas have got it so wrong. They're completely disconnected at this point. I'm talking about that one bloke, which we assume to be T-Hawk, who went on one note and just wouldn't shut up about the promo. The one whose career has just been one bad thing after another. You're the flashpoint for all of this. You're the one who Takagi and myself left the dojo to, and which you made a complete shambles of. We left the dojo to you, and thus began your reign of terror, where apparently, God only knows where you got the money from, you'd be shoving the luxury items you bought in the young boys' faces. All of the Reiwa lads have got the same thing to say about you about that time period. Thank God he's gone, is what they say. Me? I'm an interested party in all of this. I've been there every step of the way and seen everything. I was there. So shut up, you fucking gob. Yeah, right. If I go into any more detail, I reckon Bossman is going to have my head, so I'll put my phone down. We'll probably put the rest of my grievances up on OneNote. End quote.
Yeah.
My goodness.
And then later, Yamato said, absolutely, like, I'm not going to, this isn't an angle. He's like, because T-Hawk later says, it's a pain to keep tracking this out in the middle of the night. So listen to this straight. I'll be waiting in Yurakucho, which I believe is a district somewhere. But he said, for some reason, July 28th is also open on his schedule. And it's just like that. And that was basically when Yamato was like, no, I'm not going to. So Yurakucho is in Tokyo. So apparently T-Hawk does not keep up with the Dragon Gate schedule.
I mean, look, there's a million things here. The line about Shima, and look, I feel like I'm on an island now, because it's not that I'm necessarily pro Shima in 2024, but I think he actually takes way too much of a beating. But the line about Shima, in which Yamato says, Shima's the type who's elevated saying whatever pops into his head into an art form, is one of the most damning character indictments I have ever heard of anybody in my entire life.
Yeah, that is when you know someone to their core. Basically,
I mean, that is unbelievable.
And I think it's kind of like, it's worth noting that he does corroborate things that Takagi and Tozawa have said about Shima and Shimaism, as it were, and the idea of how the dojo was left to him, that Shima thought the company would absolutely fail. So they left it to T-Hawk, and the luxury good things is the thing that I'm just kind of like raising my eyebrow about, because that's like very specific.
Oh, the whole dojo thing, and this partially pertains to my interest. You know, everybody that follows Dragon Gate has their own thing that they're interested in, and I am specifically interested in the dojo. Anybody that's been over there that speaks English, I hound and hound about, you know, what goes on there, who does what, and, you know, thankfully...
I think you have a spreadsheet of who was the dojo dad at any given point in time.
I've certainly tried to keep up with that, because that was part of the Ishida thing from a few years ago that, unfortunately, nobody would listen to me about, including people that are on this very website, where... like Gamma and Kness and Super Shiso were listed, and, you know, they had Kaito Ishida's back, and it's like, well, wait, hold on, those guys haven't been to the dojo in years. The dojo, at least at that point, was KZ and Maria who were the people that, by my understanding, were sort of the figureheads. They're like, all of this information's out of date. Why are you listening to this internet troll? You should know better. I digress. But, you know, for me, the dojo is the most interesting thing, and... for them to say that about T-Hawk, to explain the poor behavior, is just all so interesting to me. And for the Reiwa guys to have that experience, because they were the ones obviously going through this as T-Hawk would have been in charge of the dojo, at least hypothetically, that is a super interesting wrinkle that I had never really put together. And I don't think it means anything. I don't think there's any conclusion to draw from any of this. I don't think it greatly impacts the future, knowing this information compared to not knowing this information. It's just really interesting to me.
I mean, I'll say that would make a lot of sense why then there was a Mochizuki-led like teaching unit that almost all the Reiwa guys were in.
That's a very... that, God damn, that's an interesting point.
Because, you know, he does not do that that often.
No, and that was always, like, Mochizuki Dojo was always a tough unit to review, because they were young guys, and they were young guys in Dragon Gate specifically, and so you can see these guys get better, you know, with every single match they have, and it was always like a weird thing where I was never really sure what to attribute to Mochizuki and what to attribute to anybody else. Like, I still don't know how much of a hand Mochizuki had in specifically training them, but Mike, that's a fascinating point. I never even considered that.
Yeah, just like looking at timelines and like from what I know from like previous stuff from OWE, you know, like would make a lot of sense why they were all kind of put into a unit to retrain them on the road while everyone else was kind of like in that people were having issues with were in Shanghai.
It also goes to the point that Jay brought up 2 weeks ago, which is like, hey, T-Hawk doesn't seem to have any friends. You know, even Eita is not homeboys with him. And for Yamato to say, you know, the other thing about T-Hawk, that he's the flashpoint for all of this and he's really the great divider, is that's got to be a heavy thing for T-Hawk when his head is the pillow at night, is to think that, you know, Shima and I guess to some degree Okamura really went out on a limb and made a point to have this be the guy.
But I mean, like,
he's so clearly not the guy.
And it was something where, like, I'm not going to try to extrapolate this one conversation into like the full clickdom of what the Dragon System might have been at any one point in time. But that also replicates in how they shoved T-Hawk down everyone's throat. And how T-Hawk's pushes kind of worked also. I feel like that it's very... It's one of those things where T-Hawk, to me, is like this giant enigma. And the more that like I see these kind of things, it's like the most that I've been interested in the guy, but it's not like wanting me to like buy a ticket. I'm not going to go buy one of his 40,000 yen bags of coffee. You know, like, I just like find it's like, how what is it with him? Like not to quote a 20-year-old show, but it's almost like Ann Veal from Arrested Development, you know, him, really him. So, yeah, no, like he's and like that kind of goes through like stuff that I, at least I've always kind of heard like, oh, yeah, no, he was the one that had like the dark mark that no one ever really wanted back.
Well, it's crazy, you know. It's why, like, we need, like, the RF video shoot interview with Yamato where you can have somebody just drilling him. And don't think I didn't try this, by the way, when he worked AEW a few years ago. Don't think I didn't send out some feelers. But it's you need, you know, Yamato in front of a camera and me going, all right, what do you think about working with Susumu? And then Yamato says something. All right, what do you think about working with Kness? And then Yamato says something. What do you remember about working with T-Hawk? And then you would just hope that Yamato would unload at that point, because now it makes me want to go back and rewatch their Kobe World main event, which, I don't know, is probably the weakest Kobe World main event of all time from 2018. That well, no, 2017.
Yeah, was 2017. Yamato
and
T-Hawk.
Yeah. I got to go back and rewatch that match now, because I'll tell you this. I went back, and this is, I'll link you to this so you can put it in the show notes, Mike.
Okay.
I went back today. It's an infamous match. Everybody should rewatch it just because it's a great match. But Yamato versus Shima from Korakuen in January 2010. Do you remember this match?
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Vaguely.
Okay. Fair.
Yeah.
After reading everything we just read, go back and watch that match, because it's already phenomenal. It's one of the best Yamato performances of all time. It's not, I wouldn't call it one of the best Shima performances. It is one of my favorite versions of Shima. I really wish we had more singles matches with him doing this rather than a big epic junior heavyweight trying to be a heavyweight style match. I wish we had more of this. Watch that match with those tweets in mind, and it elevates the match to a whole nother level. It is so interesting to have more context on that match, because those two go out there and they kill each other. And it's not with like head drops and strikes. It's with like goring each other into chairs and corking and fighting all around the venue. It's an awesome match. I'll link you to it. I'll make sure it's in the show notes.
Yeah, but it all of this is just to say Yamato now, 9 days as his sixth Open the Dreamgate champion. Heat check. I feel like this guy is even more like we'll talk about some predictions later on, but I feel like I'm getting comfy right now, because this is going to be a long ride with him right now.
Look, I would have loved for a Benkei to win at Kobe World. It would have been super interesting. I think Ben having a long run with the Dreamgate belt with his current position is a super interesting thing to explore. I think he'll eventually get that third Dreamgate run, and I think he'll have that time. But I'm already having sort of a hard time thinking objectively, like, oh yeah, Ben should have won that match, because we have 40 minutes worth of Yamato talk, and that's not talking about anything in the ring. That's not talking about the upcoming Dreamgate match or what he did in Kobe. This guy is interesting right now. And what's going to take this Yamato reign to the next level, and I hope they can get there, is I started thinking today, okay, what is Paradox? Paradox is this unit with Yamato on top, Doi and Dragon Kid beneath him, which is, you know, a great foundation, and Susumu and Kagetora, who, I got to be honest, I thought they kicked ass on that Kobe show. I'll say this now. Susumu and Kagetora versus Hulk and Maria it had no business being as good as it was. I thought that match was fantastic. You have this unit that's, you know, old guys, and all they're really known for right now is being old guys. If Paradox gets hot, not in the sense of Yamato has great matches, Doi has great matches, Dragon Kid has great matches, Susumu and Kagetora are always going to be great, but if they get hot in the way that when Zebrats is really cooking, Zebrats feels like a full-on unit. Or when Vibes is great, like Vibes just existing brings something into their matches. Gold Class at times has had that. Big Hug when they're really clicking has that. D Courage at their best 2 years ago, they had that. If Paradox feels like a hot unit rather than a unit that is made up of wrestlers with momentum, this could be the first time that Yamato has been in an interesting and engaging unit since he left Berserk. I think it's been that long because it was Tri-Vanguard, which I don't want to speak for you, but I was never into until the KZ Maria UT stuff towards the end of that unit. It was
right,
it was Team Dragon Gate, which I liked, but it, you know, it wasn't like, oh my God, look at Yamato's unit. It was, you know, a
holding
means to
pen.
An end.
Exactly. It was a holding pen before the RED versus Toriumon Generation match.
Exactly, exactly. And then you had High End, which universally sucked, one of the worst units they've ever had. And then you had a year of exploration. So we're going on 8 years now, eight full years where we haven't been able to rally around a Yamato unit. It's why I was so in favor last year of him doing the year of exploration, of him saying, I'm not in a unit, I'm not in the title picture, I don't want to be in storylines, I'm basically having a midlife crisis year. I just want to fuck around. I've worked hard my entire life. Let me have a year where I buy a boathouse and I do my thing. That is essentially what 2023 was for Yamato. And now he's back. And it's not that the concept of this unit is great. It's not. That's my reservation with it. But a few different things are lining up to where Doyen, Dragon Kid are doing what they are. Susumu and Kagetora are always going to be good. And now Yamato has this momentum that he hasn't had in such a long time. There's a chance that this becomes a really special unit given who's all involved here. And it could be the thing that eventually, ultimately, and I think this is in play here, tell me if I'm wrong, this could completely change Yamato's legacy. This Dreamgate run has that level of stakes to it.
Well, I think that's absolutely the case. I mean, look at what was supposed to happen in 2016. Like, you go back and say, the last time that Yamato was in a unit that felt like it was at his level, like it was in the, we didn't have moments of like, Yamato's in this unit, like, come on, Yamato. Like we said that constantly since 2016. And a lot of that is the fact that that, at the time, felt like was going to be the run, the Yamato run. And if you look at how that title run went and how long it went and all the defenses and how it ended, it was kind of treated like that. But you had 3 months of basically spinning the wheels because of a tournament and then one of his peers leaving the company. So this is the chance for him at his age right now to finally get what we all expected was going to happen in 2016. And I think you compare and contrast Tri-Vanguard and Paradox in this scenario. And I think you look at Paradox. And the thing that kind of struck me watching this show and watching Yokosuka Chome, you know, reuniting on the as like a second from the top Kobe Sambo Hall match against Hulk and Maria. And you're just like, wow, this is a unit that like already had all of this history that it's like, oh, you're throwing a Kakatora and Susumu tag match on a show now. And now it's not just like, hey, original Jimmy's reuniting. Now it's like, okay, we're playing off of the history now. And it's something that like every month when the company comes through Tokyo, or comes through Kobe, comes through Osaka, wherever, that there's a chance that you get to see these things. And I think that getting to see Doyama, getting to see Diefly, getting to see like just like you take the five guys in that unit and you go like, oh my God, there's a lot of legendary tag teams here. And I think that that's like a unique scenario that allows Paradox really to get this runway that they could very quickly become one of those kind of company or is in the orbit of this promotion or of this unit, because it's just very, they have such a rich history at this point already.
How many times over the last few years, from High End on, has there been a great Fukuoka card or a great Kobe card or a great Osaka number 2 card, and there's 7 matches on the show, and it's like, oh, match 1 is the young guys in it, that's cool. Match 3 looks super good. Oh, match 4, look at that natural vibes tag. Oh, matches 5 and 6 could be awesome. And then Yamato's in the main event, and it maybe forced isn't the right word. It feels like the default setting is like, oh, you're going to have the super hot show, and then here's a Yamato six-man tag to bring the folks home. And we understand why it's there. We get it, but it's the least exciting-looking thing on paper. The difference now, and I thought it was evident in the Kobe main event, is that in the high-end universe and beyond, like, again, Yamato's kind of been the default setting. He's the guy that ends a lot of these shows, but he feels off in his own universe. He doesn't feel like he's within the fabric of this promotion. And when he wrestled Vibes, you know, it was Dragon Kid, Doi, and Yamato against Shimizu, Strong Machine, Jay, and UT, Dreamgate and Twin Gate versus Triangle Gate, which I thought was really good booking for a show like this. The thing that I liked, and maybe you felt this way too, but it seemed like Yamato was in the thick of it. It's really exciting. It's why I'm so bullish on this title run, is I just feel like he's back to being Mr. Dragon Gate in a way that is not a default setting. It's an earned position. And, you know, I'm curious from his perspective. Like, I would love to sit down with Yamato and go, is 2017, is that what you define your career by? Are you happy with that Dreamgate run? Because you and I certainly aren't, and I would think most people listening to this, even if they loved the Mochizuki match, let's say, or the Shingo match that kicked off the run, or the Tozawa match, or even, you know, the Hulk match in Korkin that we talked about last week, there were high points there. But I mean, I hate that ring with a passion. It's just, it was not an enjoyable time of Dragon Gate, and it was not an enjoyable Dreamgate run. And I kind of dreaded the fact that we would have these really fun shows, and then at the very end, we'd have to watch a Yamato match, and it just wasn't any fun. And I feel like, once again, to reiterate this, this could be a legacy-altering title run, and it doesn't hinge on Yamato's performance. It doesn't hinge on who Yamato wrestles. I think, by and large, it really hinges on what is Paradox going to be, and can they form a greater identity than what they have now?
And I feel like, at the very least, as of July 28th in Kobe, in this main event, we saw a Yamato who felt more possessed and kind of more in command than of that title run. And you saw pretty easy chemistry, I felt like, in that match, especially the closing stretch with him and UT. So he pins UT for Galleria. But this was after, like, the moments for the passion. That was one of the louder pops I think I've heard in that building since crowds cheering was allowed back.
Well, it's obvious that at least the grouping of Paradox is working. I mean, I talked to a bunch of people that were at Kobe World, and, you know, people that have gone to recent Korakuen shows or the Osaka show or Sambo Hall. We've had pretty widespread coverage of at least one person I know being at these shows that I can ask intel on. And I'm always curious about merch. And it's Big Hug stuff and Hyo stuff, and it's the Paradox stuff, and specifically the Dragon Kid and Naruki Doi stuff that's really selling right now from what people tell me. It leads to a greater talking point, which can be folded in not only with Yamato's run, but also the Twin Gate situation, where I think we have to recalibrate our thoughts in general on the younger generation and what Dragon Gate is doing with the Reiwa 6, and what does Yamato's Dreamgate run mean for those guys? It means nothing. They're telling a story here. The story is that Yamato watched the Reiwa guys have the title for a year, and the story is that Yamato said, wait a minute, I'm better than them. I can be Dreamgate champion again. And that's exactly what happened. And they're in the middle of telling this story. And if everything goes well, it will not only be beneficial for at least one of those guys, whether it be Minoru or Shun or Yoshioka, but in a perfect world, it's beneficial for all of them. This is something where I think you can get a lot of mileage out of this, but I will reiterate this point. Yamato's title run is not an indictment on Ben K or Shun Skywalker or Yuki Yoshioka or any of the young guys. It's part of a story, and I think we're all losing sight of that.
And I think that when you lose sight of it, you're kind of forgetting the logic of, like, all right, we had a year where Kakuta was cemented, Shun Skywalker continued, and then also, along the same lines, Ben getting his groove back, all of those sort of things. And it's not like that progression is an is a straight line. Like, that's always like a thing that if you ever read like a coaching book, which they're usually pretty bad, I feel like, because coaches pretty much say like the same thing. And a lot of it boils down to like the sheer power of belief and how you get that belief in a way. And it's in a lot of ways, it's like, oh, Yamato is still here. He's still great. This is not a Tanahashi situation. This is a, hey, I realized that what I missed in this company was me on top, and he's still only 42. Like, that's the other thing. He has not turned 43 yet, and out not in his 20th year in wrestling. He's still, in a lot of ways, still, I mean, yes, Yamato has less years in front of him than behind him, but it's not a, like, a, I really hazard even like bothering comparing it to like your Mudos or like if Tanahashi was like in a situation like that, just because of just ability and the fact that after the 14 minute promo, it was like, oh, now everyone knows that Yamato wanted to be Dream Gate champion, not just because Dragon Gate missed Yamato. It's that he feels like he's the only person who can be the one that leads him back to full buildings. And it's just like, oh, okay. And that's a full story in of itself that does not even involve the Ray Wah 6, if you think about it.
And there, and by the way, there's truth to that. Yamato's still the biggest star they have. He's their biggest draw, and the Ray Wah 6 ideally will surpass him at some point, but it's still a larger story that they're telling.
Right, yeah. But like the idea that like it's just like, oh, we're waiting for Mochizuki Jr. No, no, it's not that whatsoever. There's not, if anything, you get to have like, wow, all right, Kakuta now is going to get Kakuta versus Yamato in a build, in a newer kind of building. And that's at a show that traditionally, like, Yamato Dream Gate matches at Dangerous Gate traditionally go really well. And it's usually one of those things that I feel like that often we see the best of Yamato in that situation. And I think that that's the side of the coin that people who are thinking that we are fast forwarding to 2029 are missing, is the fact that like there's value here.
I'll preface this with, if you disagree and you think I'm moving the goalpost back, to tell me in the Discord that you think I'm wrong on this, because I can certainly understand why some people might be annoyed with what I'm about to say, given how bullish I am on Dragon Gate's younger generation, given how youth-centric I often am, and how I want the best for the guys that are not only under 30, but the guys under 25 at times. As I look at the wrestling world and how the Dragon Gate roster, I still think, is from a consistency standpoint when it comes to both output and overall usage, the best roster in the world. I know people are into the G1. I will catch up and see if people are telling the truth or not. I'm a little dubious. You know, AEW has has great talent, but they don't always use them well. Dragon Gate is the most bang for your buck in terms of the roster. What is the argument against not having Yamato be your Dream Gate champions, one thing, but Dragon Kid and Naruki Doi as your Twin Gate champions? What is the argument against that? Because I listened to Rich on his Flagship Plus on the Flagship Patreon, and he pushed back at my review a little bit, which I appreciated. I enjoy talking about Dragon Gate on this granular of a level, believe it or not. But he pushed back on what I said in my review about how it's not an indictment on the younger generation because Yamato's your champion and Dragon Kid and Naruki Doi are your Twin Gate champions. I would make the argument that the Twin Gates have nothing to do with this and that it's its own separate conversation. But even if you want to lump them in, why would they not be your Twin Gate champions? It's Dragon Kid and Naruki Doi, and if you listen to Alan Forel's excellent podcast on both of those guys, but Doi in particular this past week, he is, if not the best pound-for-pound wrestler in the world in 2024, although I think he's damn close at this point, he is the single most enjoyable wrestler of this year. And to your point, they can still go. It's not Muto. It's not Tanahashi. These guys, Doi's doing the best work of his career, and Dragon Kid's not far behind, and Yamato has a chance to also do the best work of his career. Somebody explain to me why that's a bad thing.
Someone explain to me why someone 15 years younger than Muto, who still has drawing pedigree, should not be optimized.
And I know Muto is the red herring in all of this. I think everybody outside of those in Pro Wrestling Noah's booking office recognized that that was a bad deal, and a lot of people are.
It was an attempt that they managed to say that they put 30,000 people in the Tokyo Dome, and it's their letters next to Keiji Muto's retirement.
And I think I said this on the air a few weeks ago. If not, I said it to you in private. But in hindsight, the Muto thing that really shocks me is just how many English speakers were watching Pro Wrestling Noah.
Yeah,
while Muto was champion. That is really, in hindsight, like, holy shit. And again, part of that's COVID. People had more time. I get it. But also, a lot of fucking people were watching Noah at that time.
I mean, and I felt like that era of Noah was interminable. Like, but
I understand, you know, Muto is the extreme. Some people might say, well, it's not Muto, but it's not good. I don't know. I'm struggling to sit here and go, here's why I wouldn't have Naruki Doi as my champion. In fact, if I were in the room, I'd be going, can we get Doi and Yamato in a dream game match, baby? Can we milk this Doi thing a little bit? Can he at least go to the finals of King of Gate? Can we do something more with Naruki Doi than what we're already doing with him? I think we're at that level, and I just push back on the idea again that, like, because these guys are in their 40s, because they can still go, that they shouldn't be pushed to some degree. And again, I look at the Twin Gate thing completely separate of the Dream Gate thing. But if you want to combine them, I think it's the same argument for both sets of titles.
Did people say the same about Masaki Mochizuki winning the Dream Gate?
No, but that's because Mochizuki's Q rating is what it is.
Right. Yeah, I think it's just something that Yamato had, you know, for better or for worse, a very... I think that the story of this episode of Open the Voice Gate is that 2016 was not kind to his legacy, and this is his time to reunite it because he had a very tepid title run there. And I feel like that if you took that title run out, maybe people would be more be like treating it more charitably, I think I would say.
I'm very wary of doing the "Are we sure Yamato's not underrated" segment. I'm curious to see what happens at Dangerous Gate. We might have to do that.
And I'm curious for all of the baby with the bathwater that I've seen. Like, how can you make that declaration right now until, like, you see how this title run goes? Because who's to say if Yamato loses the title and then the houses go to, like, 2000 for Kobe World 2025, then we have a real conversation about that. But until, like, that there's actual evidence that this is the wrong move, I just think that it's a lot of kind of squawking when they're doing essentially the exact same thing they did during Blood Warriors in Junction 3.
Very good point there. We have a Dreamgate match set for Dangerous Gate. It is not Yamato versus Kai, which I am absolutely stunned by. What is it instead?
It is Yamato versus the Hip Bomber Madoka Kakuta. Wins a Royal Sambo that case. I think outside of the main event, I enjoyed the Royal Sambo the most. It was like the crowd was really into it, and the Ben and Kakuta segment towards the end was a lot of fun. It was a more hefty than usual Royal Sambo, but Kakuta came out, made the challenge, and on August 12th at Yokohama Budokan, it is Yamato making his first defense of this Open the Dream Gate title run against Madoka Kakuta. Not a Yokohama native. I have a prediction about Yokohama natives that we'll talk about with the other title match that was made later on with this, but I mean this is why you have Yamato's champion. You know, you bring Kakuta, someone that I think that we've seen his 2024 not be really much of anything, and it's not due to fault from himself. That was just the cycle down. And am I a little surprised that 7 months is the cycle down for Madoka Kakuta at age 24? A little bit. I figured that, like, we would be talking Champion Gate 2025 for his next title shot, personally. But, hey, I thought through the Royal Sambo, at the very least, that Kakuta got reheated and was completely viable. And I think it works for Yokohama.
First of all, the Royal Sambo was fantastic because you not only had that great closing stretch with Ben and Kakuta, which, logical step one to step two booking. Ben was just your Dreamgate champion. He got beat by Yamato. Who does Kakuta beat to get a Dreamgate opportunity? Ben K. I thought that was beautifully laid out. The other stuff in the match was the gold class stuff where Rita. you had Rita and Minoru and Ben working together, and then they all one by one turned on each other. That led to Rita doing the side headlock pin on Minoru and actually pinning Minoru with the side headlock pin, which was just fantastic. I am so into that singles match at Cork, and this was an upper tier battle royal.
I mean, Shun got potato sacked over the top rope and it was amazing. And then Shun, like after all of this, like decided just to rant on the microphone right after the match. So
excellent stuff.
But Kakuta getting the dream key. What are your thoughts?
I think it was Andy who listens to the show. Somebody said something that is so right, which is, you know, this Dreamgate run for Yamato might be legacy defining, but in the short term, in the now, in the immediate future, this is where Kakuta really needs to show up. And my thoughts on his ceiling and his overall presence in this company is going to greatly be impacted by his performance in this match. I said specifically in the Voices of Wrestling 30 Under 30, I said his Dreamgate run wasn't what it should have been. He had the bad Kobe World angle, and he had the horrific angle at Final Gate. He had no luck when it came to booking. Even the Minoru match, which it was like, all right, they did everything right in King of Gate, and then for some reason that match just wasn't hot. The only thing that really worked was the Shimizu stuff, which was outstanding, and yeah, that's because it's Big Boss Shimizu, and he's forever underrated. I said in the 30 Under 30, don't count Kakuta out. This is a guy that's going to be back in the top of the card. Don't worry about his Dreamgate run. We've seen enough of him over his short career, mind you, his very short career, that I feel confident saying this is a guy that belongs on this list. I like that I'm voting for him. I assume I'll vote for him next year and the year after that. If Kakuta bombs in this match, we'll have to have a very serious conversation on where he goes from here. Because I'm 95% certain that he and Yamato will have a banger. I believe this is a first time ever singles match, but there is 5% staring me in the face that I just cannot fully ignore.
It is really the moment where now we get to see Kakuta as the challenger after the story was told, after he finished his story, after he got that. And I think in a lot of ways, I mean, everything that we say about him is couched with this idea that he's 24 years old, and that is preposterous. And I wonder, with him and with people like Junior and people like SMJ, if there's a little bit of, hey, we want to get them like the accomplishments, but at a certain point we have to be willing to say like, they need to be knocked down and be built back up. And I think that that's really the kind of match that you want to see coming out of Yokohama, I would say, is the match where Yamato basically has to take him down and grind him down. And at the end of it, basically Kakuta is not able to like make the one last clothesline or the one last pin. Like, it has to be that kind of story for him. But that's also, again, couching the idea that he's 24. And that's kind of a preposterous idea about, there's a bit of me that's like, am I going to forsake this guy if this is it for him? And we kind of forsake someone we talked about earlier, pretty early. But I feel in a lot of ways that he's in a much better place than that person. And I feel like that he, at his age, he's going to get a lot of opportunities. And it's just going to happen again and again. And at the very least, the crowd accepted him once as champion. So that's one thing that T-Hawk never was able to say.
The interesting thing is they have zero TV to build this match because Cork and Kakuta's in the main event, D Courage and Taguchi versus Z-Bratz, and 11 days later they're in Yokohama Budokan. They have no Kobe, they have no Fukuoka, they have no Osaka, they have nothing. They've got a bunch of house shows, including like the Dragon Daya house show and the UT house show, which, you know, why we don't get Nagoya, and I think that'll be the last Dragon Gate show at the Nagoya International Congress Center for at least a year, because that venue is going under construction. Why those aren't on the network, I don't know, but we won't get any build to this other than what we've already gotten, and, you know, maybe an angle, maybe a promo in Korkin. So that'll be very interesting to see the heat of this match, because it's not like Kikuta versus Shimizu from last year. It's not this long-running thing. It's not like Yamato versus Ben from Kobe. This is going to be quick and to the point, and they're going to have to rely on having a great match, which I assume they can do, but I still have my reservations.
And the other title match, it was not immediately made in Kobe, but coming out of it, Natural Vibes versus Big Hug. So those are our two title matches that we have. So I don't know if we can really anticipate other challenges to be made at Korkin as well, just because of how the match setup is. Like, who is Naruki Doi going up against? I closed that window real quick.
On Korkin, it is Doi, Dragon Kid, and Kagatora versus Mochi, Kondo, and Awashi.
I guess they're going to do Agon, maybe? Because, like...
Yeah. Because
the problem with Daya being in that main event is, like, it's going to be hard to get all four title matches set up just based off this.
Yeah, this feels like... This feels like Ishin and Kai have the credibility now to step in and go, well, we'll take that Twin Gate match, and that's what I'm hoping happens, but I don't know. I would think you have to do something big with Kai. It's his hometown, and he's not in the Triangle Gate match. This feels like we're headed towards Ishin and Kai versus Doi and Dragon Kid, but I also thought we were getting Yamato versus Kai, so what do I know?
Right, and neither of those Z-Brats guys are in that match because they're in the main event.
That's right. Which, you know, the Doi match is match four. That'll be pre-intermission. The intermission match will be Monte and Shimizu, which could be really, really good. I'm excited for that. But you could have Paradox do their thing and then have Ishin and Kai come out and beat down Dragon Kid and Doi and say, we're going to, you know, end D-Courage tonight, and then we're going to take the Twin Gates at Yokohama Budokan. That feels realistic.
Yep, that's fair. I don't know how we're going to get to a Brave Gate match, though.
Yeah, because Shun is too important, Kai's too big, Ishin's too big, and I mean, I guess they could do Jason.
Jason's way too big, man.
That's true. I'm thinking of 2021 Jason, not 2024 Jason. Yeah, I don't know what they'll do there. Maybe it's Minorita. Maybe it's Estrella. Maybe it's the Estrella send off.
That's fair. Word salad there.
Give it another shot. Take three. Here we go.
Yeah. This is saying it here. Elsewhere. There we go. Why did I go other? Elsewhere on the Kobe Sambo Hall show, we got Yokosuka Chome, the original Jimmies, Susumu Yokosuka and Kagatora versus BB Hulk and Maria. It was a Guramakakari out of a Maria kiss attempt. And for someone that we heard is not going to be a full-time wrestler, Maria, this basically was a handicap match, because I don't remember much of Hulk in this match whatsoever.
Okay, it's funny you say that, because I actually was going to say, while Hulk was in the match, I thought he was great. We somehow got two really good Hulk performances in the span of a week. I'm not alone in thinking this match way over-delivered, right?
I was 3.5 on this. When you get to the closing stretch, I felt like that the payoff that they did for Maria kissing Susumu, the crowd was up for everything. And I mean, it's...
You would have thought Choshu was coming out the way they reacted to it. It was a fantastic pop.
Yeah. That's the thing about this summer festival. Like, if you find yourself in the greater Hyogo area after a Kobe Pro Wrestling Festival... These summer festivals seem like a blast to go to.
And I didn't see an attendance number for this. 560
or so.
Okay, it seemed more full than a normal Sambo show.
Right, 562.
Yeah, and when they did it in Osaka last year, it drew a great house in Osaka. So this is a gimmick that works.
Yeah, and I think elsewhere you have... I think getting to see like Yokosuka Chome, like we talked earlier about why I think Paradox works, and it's the fact you have like these teams here, and in a little bit you got like maybe Hulk didn't resonate with me because everything was like so geared towards Maria, but it felt like in a way for like this festival show you had this match that felt like straight out of what, 2017?
Yeah,
which I thought was neat.
No, I really enjoyed it. The whole show was fun. You know, we talked about the main event, we talked about the semi-main, we talked about the battle royal. I thought the opener once again had some really, really fun junior stuff, and more importantly, I will say it every week until they do something about it. Get Daiki Yanagiuchi in a unit. This guy is too good to just be working opening matches in front of with random old guys.
I have as a note here, just knee my dad in the head. It works every time. I like that. That's so now good. Junior's. That's Junior's offense. Whenever he's now going to be facing off against his dad, is I'm just going to try to knee him as much as possible. Yeah, I was 3.5 stars on this too. Like I was equal on both of these tags. I thought that it was a pretty strong night. Like the new Kung Fu Master stuff did not do much for me, but
no,
yeah.
But that's I. You know, I'm glad you said that because I was just going to gloss over it. The original Kung Fu Masters delivered so far above their pay grade that this is the natural come down. This is kind of what that unit, I think the intent was always for this unit to be the way that it is now. And it just so happened that they found magic with Jason and Jackie.
Sure.
I love the idea of a localized unit. Quite honestly, I wish they did it in all of their main markets. I wish there was a Fukuoka unit and an Osaka unit and even a Tokyo one with like Mochizuki would be really cool. I love this concept. This feels right. This feels like this is where Kung Fu should be. And that the last 2 years before this, they were just way over delivering on their promise.
Yeah, that's fair. Est doing a rope run 450 splash. That was a neat finish
it
on
was
that
fun.
Though. Yeah, but a very fun Kobe Sambo Hall show closing out the July. Let's go through that Korakuen show. We kind of talked a little bit around that, but as we've mentioned, the main event of this show is D-Courage plus Ryusuke Taguchi. This was the thing that I did not like calculate when this was announced. The fact that now like we're going to get an entire ass-based promo about him and Kakuta right before his Dreamgate shot. That's going to be the final moment that we have leading up to Dangerous Gate.
I gotta be honest, that sounds great.
I think he better like be like Carl Anderson over Maria. Like that's why I'm wanting it. Like he should be just like obsessed with Kakuta.
I could get burned, and we'll talk about it next week. Obviously, I am bullish on this Taguchi appearance. I think this could end up being a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that it is at the very least has an opportunity to be very weird and. I will take that in a show that is probably going to have a lot of moving parts going on. Semi-main event, we have Yamato and Susumu Yokosuka versus Hyo and Jackie Kamei. Interesting that this is the match that they do coming out of that. You're getting kind of the Triangle Gate preview in the match before that with Luis Monte versus Big Boss Shimizu. I felt like you could probably do SMJ and UT versus Hyo and Jack, and I would like that instead of the.
Yeah, this could be really good, though.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, like, I'm not going to count out Susumu Yokosuka case.
Well, and it's an interesting wrinkle where, you know, I don't think Kame or Hyo are going to challenge for the Dreamgate, but I'm also really curious to see what they do with Yamato and see if it leads to anything.
Right. Like, I feel like that the fun of this kind of Yamato title run is that I feel like it adds a little bit of extra English on what happens if we get that long dreamed about Jackie Kamei Korakuen Dreamgate shot.
Yep.
Because Yamato has a little bit of extra to him in the same way that getting that match against Masaki Mochizuki meant a little bit more different than if you had it against Yuki Oshioka.
Yeah, absolutely.
Luis Monte versus Big Boss Shimizu, we talked about.
That will end in a shot put slam countered into a Hurricane Rana and a pin. And I think we all know that.
Big Man Lucha.
Yeah.
Can't wait. Paradox versus Agon, DK, Doi, and Kage versus Mochi, Kondo, and Awashi. The match that everyone has been kind of circled since it was made. Kota Minoura versus Minorita, match 3.
If everything goes the way that I think it should, this will be one of those classic Dragon Gate shows where there's 2 hours of wrestling and one show closing angle that takes 50 minutes. That feels like that's what we're in store for here with not only the Taguchi, Kakuta, Yamato stuff that you alluded to, but also what the hell are they going to do with Kota Minoura?
Right. Yeah. I like the fact that it's put at match 3. So you get this done. It gets out of your mind. And then suddenly someone in a Z mask pops up in the main event, you mm-hmm. know,
yep.
Like, as you said, 2 hours of wrestling, 55 minute angle. Perfect Dragon Gate Korakuen. And if you ask me, match 2, this could be Fest send-off match also. Ultimo teams with La Estrella and Juta Miyawaki, which is another reason why I think this might be the send-off match, versus Don Fuji, Punch Tobinaga, and Daiki Yanagiuchi.
Are they going to send Juta off to pasture and say, give us your boots, you can no longer wrestle?
I mean...
We didn't talk about the Buyuden show. Sorry to cut you off. I definitely gave you a window to talk, and now I'm just going to talk over you, which I do apologize for. It's very rude of me. But Juta had the best performance of his life on the Buyuden show.
I had that on my backlog. And I was almost like, oh, we're past this. I'm not going to talk about Buyuden. I've not seen that show.
Oh, dude, you got to watch it.
All right.
It's really fun.
Yeah, it just was the time that it happened.
Of course. No, yeah. The opening match is Junta and Awada versus Daiki and Fuda.
I like Awada. I really like Awada.
The stuff that you would think would be good is good. It's the young guys. It's Flamita and Monte versus Alpha Wolf and Dragon Bane, which 1,000% lived up to the expectation.
I saw the gifts of that.
Yeah, that match kicks ass. And then the main event is really, really fun.
All right, I'll make time for that, though.
Yeah, you won't believe how good Junta is in that match, because you and I both know that Junta Miyawaki is a horrible professional wrestler. I personally make myself laugh every single time I think about the phrase that I coined, which was Junta doing lucha at gunpoint, which is what it looked like anytime he wrestled in Mexico. He's not good. I don't anticipate him ever being that good, but oh my God, was he good on that show.
I just think it's funny that he's around.
Well, that's, you know, it's
yep.
It's certainly salt in the wounds for some men that he traveled abroad with. Look, for those that don't know, and I say this with 95% certainty, Junta being booked on the show is the closest a wrestling booking has ever come to a subtweet that you are not welcome here. I will leave it at that. Again, one day we can maybe tell the story that you and I have 99% confirmed, that I've never been able to fully get confirmed in a way that I feel comfortable talking about on this show. But Junta being on the show does not feel like a random occurrence.
Yeah, we're going to send $20 to Aaron Bentley before we do that show. The opener for Corkin is Natural Vibes, Strong Machine J, KZ, UT versus Gold Class, Benkei, BB Hulk, and Mochizuki Jr. Does kind of feel like that those Benkei and Jr. in a lot of ways, even though that Daiki and Jr., fun team, does kind of feel like the focus has kind of went away from them in Sambo Hall in a way that kind of allows the focus to be pulled to Minoru versus Rita.
I like that Junior and Shark Machine J are going to get to go at it one more time.
Oh God, yeah, because I can't wait for like 5 years down the line and SMJ and Mochizuki Junior still hating each other.
Yeah, no, it's great stuff. Now, on air production meeting real quick, Mike, I have 10 minutes max, so we're going to have to change around the show sheet here. Do you want to skip the middle portion, because both of those will be relevant next week or maybe even the week after? Do you want to jump straight to some quick predictions before we get out of here?
Yeah, let's do quick predictions and get out of here.
Okay, all right, because we're going to talk about the SB Kento and Takuma match that may tape in Mexico for DTU. It's in the Dragon Gate channel on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. You can watch it there. We'll try to talk about that next week. And then we were going to talk about Pac and Arena Mexico, because I assumed it was going to be a one-off, but he's back this Friday, so we'll hold off on that as well.
I mean, when you make a clip like that he'd made, that, I mean, a bastardo, he's going to be like, I mean he's going to, didn't they name him to the Grand Prix too?
No, just Claudio. The Grand Prix, let me see if I can find those real quick, because the Grand Prix, which was a top 10 match for me last year. I had the Grand Prix
Cybernetico always rocks.
Yeah, because last year was like all the LA Dojo kids that were still there. So it was like TJP and Kevin Knight.
Who was so good in Mexico.
Yeah. Just a bunch of really, really fun things. Let me see if I can find it real quick. Damn, where'd it go? Let me pull up Cubs fans. I was hoping I was going to find it in the Discord, but I couldn't. So let me command find Claudio real quick. And it is Ikura Kwan, who's an MLW guy.
Yes.
It is Flip Gordon, who I have nothing against Flip Gordon on a personal level. He's a dumb guy, but wrestling is filled with dumb guys. He's not the exception. I know he's doing what a lot of people think is good work in CMLL. I have a mental block to where I just cannot. I don't want Flip Gordon in CMLL. There's nothing wrong with his work. I don't have opinions on him as a person. When I turn on CMLL, I don't want to see him. So I hold that against him. That's not fair to him.
He's not allowed to be in the Marco Corleone role.
No,
you're absolutely right. No, I'm with you on this. It feels weird.
Like Griffin Peltier, who is a great mind for wrestling, a great archivist, and somebody that is also really into CMLL. Griffin loves the work that he's doing. I'm pretty sure it's Griffin. I hope I'm attributing that to the right person. I get it. It's just mentally, I can't wrap my head around it. So it's Quan, it's Gordon, it's Rocky Romero, it's Robbie Eagles, Kyle Fletcher, Mansoor, Akira, who is also from MLW, Davey Boy Smith Jr., Yota Tsuji, and Claudio Castagnoli.
God, how does Davey Boy Smith Jr. get that booking?
I don't know. I don't know. He will not fit in that match.
Oh, he'll be awful in that. Mansoor, I feel like Mansoor can get super over for
Arena Mexico. I feel like I'm getting pranked with Mansoor. He just keeps on showing up. Like, I don't watch a ton of promotions anymore. Mansoor's in all of the promotions that I watch other than Dragon Gate. What happened? What am I missing?
I think that this is like the weird, rare WWE crossover thing that I think actually works a lot better out of WWE.
All right. I'll give it a try.
Them versus FDR was actually really entertaining.
Okay. All right. Good to know. That's good to know. I like that. Do you want to do some second half predictions before we go here?
Right. So we have I have three of them. We have our second half predictions. My first one's a really safe one. I believe that Yamato will be champion into 2025, and I can be convinced that he will be champion leaving Kobe World 2025 too.
My prediction, my first one, is going to piggyback off of that, which is that Not Hug will be Twin Gate champions heading into Final Gate. I can't promise they'll retain them at Final Gate, but I think we have our Dream Gate champion and our Twin Gate champions set through the end of the year.
I like that. I like that. My next prediction, next SEAL unit, six members, Shun Skywalker, Jason Lee, Ishin, Yoshiki Kato, Kota Minora, and Minorita.
Oh.
Yeah. It was something that came to me as I was looking at the Corkin show card today. I was like,
huh.
What if it's not that we're expecting Kota to just completely lose it and snap, and then Rita would be like, I took your name and all that. What if Rita's like right on board with him going evil? It's like, nah, you're my guy. I'm with you with it. And that solves a lot of problems in the next heel unit and the issue they always have with heel units and membership and lost posts.
That's, I did not consider that. That is a good idea.
Hey, I've got one more real good one.
Okay. All right. My number two prediction. We talked last week about how Hio has yet to have that career defining match. My prediction number two is that Hio will be the focal point of a top 10 match of the year contender by the end of the year. That doesn't have to be a singles match. It could be a Twin Gate match or a trios match where he is the guy that everybody is talking about, and it is a top 10 match of the year contender.
Could that match have already happened, though?
No.
Okay, so the cage match is out of the question.
No, because I look at that as a Kame match more okay. So.
That's fair. That's fair. All right. My third one. Our next big show, Yokohama. We've been speculating about where they were going to put the hometown guys in Yokohama. And we thought that, hey, Kai has been away from the Dreamgate picture. And Yamato versus Kai, I guess we're going to redo this thing. In case we didn't think about that fact of like redoing Yamato versus Kai.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another person from Yokohama, and that's Strong Machine J. And before I give this prediction, Case, what is one of the biggest things about Dead or Alive each year?
Dragon Kid loses in his hometown.
I think that Strong Machine J is going to have and this is going to be not just a 2024 prediction, 2025 prediction. I think that like we're probably going to have like a long-term storyline of Strong Machine J getting beat in his hometown. I think that he'll lose. Right now, I think Natural Vibes drops to Big Hug. Now you get the triangle gate on Big Hug as a three-person act. That's great. And then, the fact that he lost at Gate of Bayside to Kai, pretty convincingly. And then we have Gata Bayside coming up in January. And what if he gets another title match? I think he's going to lose again. And he's going to lose again. And this is going to be the thing is, let's see our hometown guy win in Yokohama. But that's going to be 3 or 4 years in the future. Get ready for a big seaside Strong Machine J losing streak in his hometown.
I'm into it. I think that's very possible. That feels very real. I like that.
What's your next one?
All right. My final prediction before we go. And I want to make this clear. This is not wishful thinking. This is a prediction. Yamato will defend the Dreamgate belt in Corkin Hall this year. And his opponent will not be Hyo. It will not be Jackie Kame. It will be Mochizuki Jr.
Okay. I like that. I had my moonshot with the Rita turning heel also. I like the idea that Junior getting the Corkin title shot out of the blue. All right.
It's his hometown. It's his right? home building.
Absolutely.
We've got an interesting schedule here where
he's kind of adrift.
Yeah. And you've got to do something in October. That's kind of the hang up here is, you know, Gate of Origin is in September, which kind of counts for something.
Yeah, especially if Yamato on top.
Yeah, that's a good point. Gate of Destiny is the first weekend in November. I feel like October is kind of the time to do that. And I feel like you could do Yamato versus Junior and Korakuen. That's a Friday Korakuen too, which Dragon Gate does not normally have. That's a Friday night Korakuen October 4th. Put Yamato and Junior in there.
I like that. So let's go over our three predictions and get out of here. Mine is Yamato will be Dreamgate champion into 2025, if not completely through Kobe World next year. My next heel unit has 6 members, and it's Shun, it's Jason Lee, it's Ishin, it's Yoshiki Kato when he returns, it's the turning Kota Minora, but it's also the turning Minor Rita. And then I think Strong Machine J is about to... I don't know how long I'm going to say. Let's say 3 or 4 years. He's not going to win in Yokohama Budokan, a la Dragon Kid and Nagoya.
I like that. Mine are that Nothug will hold the Twin Gate belts at least until Final Gate of this year, that Hyo will be involved in a Match of the Year contender as the focal point, and that Yamato versus Junior will happen in Corkin Hall for the Dreamgate belt.
I love that. And that's going to do it this week for Open the Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next week talking to you about this mysterious August 1st Cork. And you could follow Case at _inyourcase. I'm at Fujiheya. Thanks for listening to Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next week. Take care, everyone.
Hello. Do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.